Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. This week we're off to the theater big time, and it'll be a theatrical journey unlike anything you've ever experienced before. First, it's a touching tale of enduring friendship between a tone-deaf bird and a little tree that could. Not even winter migration could destroy their bonds of affection. Greensboro College is here to share. Then comes a gut-wrenching tale of loyalty, betrayal, family, and an exploration of the African-American experience in the 20th century like only two-time Pulitzer Prize for Drama recipient August Wilson can provide. Stained Glass Playhouse presents Fences, and we'll hear a stirring monologue you do not want to miss. Time for a few laughs later on in the show when Twin Cities stage actors reveal the true meaning of farce with their production of the multiple Tony Award-winning play Lend Me a Tenor. Peter Karoff is back with Beethoven and the true meaning of Rondo, or is it Rondo? And after that, we're off to Studio A, live with Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. They've got a new album out, and it is solid. Next on Triad Arts Weekend. When world-famous tenor Tito Morelli arrives for a fundraiser at the Cleveland Grand Opera Company, a chain reaction of mistaken identity, plot twists, and double entendres creates one of the funniest farces of the American stage. The Tony Award-winning play Lend Me a Tenor by Ken Ludwig comes to Twin Cities Stage February 1st through the 10th with shows Thursday through Saturday at 8 and Sunday matinees at 2 at Twin Cities Stage in Winston-Salem. Stan Bernstein directs. Michael Ackerman is the meek assistant manager Max, sent in to impersonate Morelli. Renee Lynn Wallach is Maggie, his hopelessly romantic and frustrated girlfriend, and they're joined by cast members Chris Swaim, Phil Powell, Mary Leah and Cameron Williams, and Janelle Jernigan. Karen Robertson and Lainey Pop will tag team on the role of Julia. Director Stan Bernstein dropped by with Twin City actors Renee Lynn Wallach and Michael Ackerman. It seems like such a silly premise, but you get into it, and it's absolutely hilarious.
It is. That's a great description of it. It really is hilarious. But the interesting thing, the point you just made about it being so incredibly silly, but that is the hallmark of great farce. Farce should be just the silliest premise, mistaken identities, things get heaped upon complications, and then when there's just no way out of this, usually something very simple happens that turns everything around and everything gets fixed, just like magic. Ken Ludwig, who's the author, is about the best practitioner of farce that we have today. He just knows how to do it. And the things are structured almost like a Chinese puzzle box. But that's the whole point of farce, is it's all this complication.
Yeah.
And being able to weave all these different elements and stories, and then at the very end, just solve it all with one really easy thing, and that, which makes it just delightful. So the point is not about deep character development and journeys of the character, and that doesn't matter. The characters can be just caricatures, but that's all you need, because it's all about the silly circumstances.
Okay.
That's what farce is all about, and it's about having fun. That's the whole point of it, is just to be fun and have a great evening's entertainment.
The play synopsis, give us in broad strokes, Stan.
Simply, the play is about the greatest opera star in the world is coming to perform in Cleveland for their 10th anniversary. So, of course, that automatically ramps up everything because everybody's so excited about this incredible guy coming to town. And when he comes to town, it's just kind of a nightmare. He's a womanizer. He drinks a lot. They just don't know what to happen. And he passes out in the middle of this, and they don't know what to do. And, of course, everything they come up with to solve the problem just causes more and more complications, more and more problems. So you've got lots and lots of mistaken identities and people thinking other people are doing other things. And police are chasing after one of them. It's just complication upon complication that just makes it funnier and funnier and funnier.
All right. Well, let's delve into it. This is Renee Lynn Wallach performing the role of Maggie, and Michael Ackerman is Max in this read from Lend Me a Tenor.
Oh, Max, just think of it. Tonight the curtain rises and he walks on stage, and suddenly there's nothing else in the world but that... that voice.
I can sing too, you know.
Oh, Max.
I can. What are you... Oh, Max.
You don't sing like Tito Morelli.
Not yet, okay?
You don't.
In your opinion, it's a matter of taste.
It is not. I wish you wouldn't fool yourself. He's a star, Max. He sings all over the world. He's in Life magazine.
So is Rin Tin Tin.
And he's very sensitive.
How do you know that?
Because I met him last year.
You did? You never told me that.
It was no big thing. When I was in Italy with Daddy, we went to La Scala, and he was in Aida. Then afterwards, we went backstage. Anyway, he looked up and saw us. And do you know what he did, Max? He kissed my palms.
Yeah? So what?
It was romantic.
He's Italian. They kiss everything.
Fine, forget it.
If it moves, they kiss it.
Max!
Great. Stan, just great writing. Ken Ludwig from start to finish. We just heard from Renee Lynn Wallach performing the role of Maggie and Michael Ackerman performing the role of Max from Lend Me a Tenor early on in the play. Michael, I would say the biggest fear is being typecast as a character. You're anything but that. It must be nice.
Yeah, this is a very, very different part from anything I've played before. I mean, I usually steer clear of musicals or anything that involves singing.
Oh, really?
Just because I don't want to put the audience through that. But
it's the perfect opportunity for this play.
So actually, I don't know. I would say that in this case, I am kind of typecast because Max is very nervous about singing. He's terrified about singing in front of an audience. And that's basically me.
No need to get into character. You're right there.
Nope. Yep. All set.
And Renee, you're helping us along the way. You seem smitten, but not necessarily from our good friend Max over there. Tell me about your character, first off.
Well, I play Maggie, who is the daughter of the opera manager, Saunders, and the girlfriend of Max. But she's quite smitten with Tito Morelli, the guest star that is coming to Chicago. And she almost lives in this fanciful world that something's going to happen with him. And she's in love with being in love. Mm-hmm. And that's where some of the craziness comes in, is just desperately wanting to be in love. And she's willing to throw herself out there for it, and to say the least. She's a very romantic figure, and she wants the ideal romance, and she's not getting it from Max. And that's where the conflict is for them at the start of the show, is she thinks Tito Morelli is this perfect romantic figure, and her boyfriend's not. So...
So, Stan, I mean, Lend Me a Tenor, one would think opera. Do we get to hear some good singing in this one?
Well, just a touch. The fun thing is...
in a kind of an Italian way. just a touch.
The characters are all bigger than life, and the situation is huge, like I said, and silly. So, to a degree, it's very operatic in feel and in scope, which is, by its very nature, bigger than life. And I think Ludwig uses that really well. I mean, it's a comedy that he structures to be almost very operatic in scope. It's big. It's huge. The characters are big. The situation is big. And he uses music from Otello and from other opera music very, very strategically within the show to help move that feel along.
This lead character, Max, kind of a meek figure, and you're a librarian, work at the Central Library not here. So you're
this stereotypical bookwormy, nebbishy librarian, I guess.
All right. But comedy, you've done comedy before. How's your foray into this world?
I don't know. I love doing comedy. I love both. I love doing dramatic parts. I love comedy. This is great because the audience, with a show like this, hopefully, in the best case scenario, the audience is there with you the whole time, reacting and going through every moment with you, and you can feel them experiencing every moment with you. With drama, it's a little bit different. You don't really feel anything until maybe the final really climactic moment. But with this one, hopefully they'll laugh all the way through.
When people think of farce, one of the main things they always think of is that one of the basics of farce is all the doorways. Mm-hmm. That's developed over the years with American farce, is 6 or 7 different doorways. And so an idea of people running in and out, somebody goes out this door, somebody else comes in the other door. So it's all this back and forth, door slamming constantly, which adds to the zaniness of it all. Mm-hmm. And we've certainly got a lot of that. So for both of these guys here, a lot of it is just, it's like a track meet because they're running constantly in one door, out the other. They're hiding in closets, they're hiding in the bathroom, they're running out of the suite, coming back in the other door. It's all of that kind of thing.
That's Twin Cities stage director Stan Bernstein. He was joined by actor Renee Lynn Wallach, who plays Maggie, and Michael Ackerman, who plays Max, in Ken Ludwig's hilarious farce, Lend Me a Tenor. The play opens on Friday, February 1st, and will run through the 10th, with shows Thursday through Saturday at 8 and Sunday matinees at 2 at Twin Cities Stage in Winston-Salem. You'll find links to ticket information and more at wfdd.org/triadarts. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and coming up on the second half of the show today, it's Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. Their new CD, A Pageant of Gold, has just been made available on CD Baby, and you'll get a sneak peek with the band live in Studio A. And Karoff is back at the keyboard to help us better understand the genius of Beethoven. But we're back at the theater next. August Wilson's play Fences weaves together the obstacles of a black man's past and the opportunities of his present. With his artful use of language and characters that leap off the page, Wilson aroused feelings of love, anger, grief, and forgiveness in a way that only he could. That ability lives on in his Pulitzer Prize-winning work, and Stained Glass Playhouse is proud to share it with Triad audiences next month. The 1983 play Fences opens Friday night, February 1st at 8 o'clock, and it'll run through the 17th with Sunday matinees at 3 in the Stained Glass Playhouse. You'll find links to ticket information at wfdd.org/triadarts. Playhouse director Jake Campbell has been an active member of the Winston-Salem theater community for many years, and she's honored to bring the words of August Wilson to life. Stained Glass actor Tanisha Turner is new to community theater in Winston, but as you're about to hear, she brings her character Rose to life like a seasoned veteran.
He comes from that, you know, African-American family, trying to do better kind of situation. And I think for him, you know, if most people don't know, he was very fair-skinned. So he had that boundary where, you know, he was trying to decide, where do I fit in?
Sort of like a Romare Bearden.
The artist who influences him a lot. A lot of his plays, he talks about how he takes artwork from Bearden and will look at it and from that begin writing.
So he was a young boy. His parents moved. These early bouts with integration did not go well.
No, they didn't. And the other issue in there as well is the relationship with his parents was not very strong. So his father left the family at some point, either in that move or right after that move. So he had to adjust not only with being fair-skinned in the North, being in the middle, so to speak, not sort of fitting in with the white kids and not completely fitting in with the black kids, but knowing that he had the African-American roots. So all of that, plus his father not fully in the picture, created a lot of backstory for him that we later see in the characters that he writes about.
That's right. And they certainly come out. And I mean, as you're saying that, I'm just thinking, I'm looking at Fences. I'm looking at Troy, Corey down the line.
You have your central character, Troy. Troy is one of those guys that's made a lot of mistakes, and he's trying to bring some stability to his life, some consistency as well. He has a son that's older that, you know, he had, and then he went into jail. So once he went into prison, he really didn't have a lot of contact with that child. When he gets out, he goes into a new relationship and has a son. He's married to that child's mother in the story. And then later on in the play, while still married to Rose, he has another child by someone else. So he ends up having three children by three different women. And he's constantly trying to build a consistent relationship with those children. There's a lot of struggle between the past and the present. Troy has a hard time letting go of the things that's happened to him in his past. So he uses that to try and raise his children. The influences, the issues he had with his parents, all of that kind of sets up who he is and how he relates to the women in his life, his friends, you know, his boss, all of that. So, and then this story is set in the 1950s, so you also have the racial tension, feeling like he's being put down and not given the same opportunities because he's African American. So all of that, you know, makes this very complex character.
Tanisha, tell me about your character, Rose. This is the matriarch. What kind of woman was Rose?
I would say Rose was Troy's sense of stability and, for the most part, something that he did right in his life. So that's what Rose represented to him. And he really loved his wife and his kids, but Rose definitely was his sense of stability.
So this is Rose in a monologue in Fences. This is toward the end of the play.
It's in the second act.
Second act.
This is after Troy tells Rose that not only has he had an affair with someone else, but he is about to be a father by this woman that he had an affair with. I've been standing with you. I've been right here with you, Troy. I got a life, too. I gave 18 years of my life to stand in the same spot with you. Don't you think I ever wanted other things? Don't you think I had dreams and hopes?
What about my life? What about me? Don't you think it ever crossed my mind to want to know other men? That I wanted to lay up somewhere and forget about my responsibilities? That I wanted someone to make me laugh so I could feel good? You're not the only one who got wants and needs. But I held on to you, Troy. I took all of my feelings, my wants and my needs and my dreams, and I buried them inside of you. I planted a seed and watched it and prayed over it, and I planted myself inside of you and waited to bloom. And it didn't take me no 18 years to find out the soil was hard and rocky and it wasn't gonna ever bloom. But I held on to you, Troy. I held you tighter. You was my husband. I owed you everything I had, every part of me I could find to give you. And upstairs in that room, with the darkness falling in on me, I gave everything I had to try and erase the doubt that you wasn't the finest man in the world. And wherever you was going, I wanted to be with you. 'Cause you was my husband. 'Cause that's the only way I was gonna survive as your wife. You always talking about what you give and what you don't have to give. But you take too. You take. And don't even know nobody's giving.
Wow, that's some powerful reading right there, Tanisha. Thank you so much. Tanisha Turner performing the role of Rose from Fences. And that use of language, it's as if I'm just sitting in the room hearing you talking to me right now. It's
rhythmic.
He had a great ear, didn't he?
I mean,
that's one thing that August Wilson, I guess, is famous for.
He uses a lot of blues to influence him in his writing. And that's one of the things when you read it, there is a sort of rhythm to it and a flow to it and some repetition. And it almost makes you wonder if he listened to blues music as he wrote the style. A lot of his monologues have a sort of flow to it that has that rhythmic feel.
So. That's right. Bessie Smith changed his world, and I can understand that. Mm-hmm. Bessie Smith is the greatest. How does it feel when you're reading those lines? Tanisha, I mean, you just get immediately into character like that, but I'm wondering from the inside out as the actor.
Honestly, every time it feels different. You just go into her world, and it's almost like you can feel her pain.
That whole idea of being a seed and planting yourself inside someone else, it's just the image is so powerful. I never thought of it that way.
Definitely. And I think as women, we can tend to do that sometimes.
That whole aspect of the play, I mean, that you're in a position where you almost have to forgive to go on.
You don't have a choice. I mean, and in this time period where it was not accustomed to get a divorce or leave your husband, Rose doesn't work. You know, he's the sole breadwinner. So she is dependent upon him in a lot of ways. Just because of where we are in society when this play is happening. So you do have to forgive. I mean, in this case today, we could walk away, you know, do whatever. But then you were dependent upon that person. So planting yourself in that seed and locking into them, that was the culture. That was the way society worked. So,
yeah. Tanisha, from your perspective, this fence, what does it mean in her life? Why is it so important to her?
For Rose, it was sense of protection. It was definitely a sense of protection in the fact that throughout the play, we're waiting for this fence to come up and it goes on. I don't want to pretty much tell too much, but it was her way of feeling protected. So it meant a lot to her.
And then on the flip side of that, very different meaning for her husband.
Yeah, I think it was a way for him. I feel like it was more of a burden and it was almost locking him in. Throughout the play, she constantly asks him to finish the fence. And he puts it off and he puts it off. And not until he felt like he was going to lose Rose did he actually finish building the fence. And even in the play, she sings a song, Jesus Be a Fence. And she mentions wanting to be protected by that fence. So, you know, symbolically in that sense, that fence represents her protection. But I think for Troy, it represents him losing his freedom, so to speak. He comes and goes as he pleases, and he tends to set boundaries for everybody else and expectations for everybody else, but wants to be able to do whatever he wants to do. And so that fence definitely represents that line that you should or should not cross, so to speak.
I woke up this morning about 4:30. Somebody knocking on my back door saying that's my rattlesnake and daddy.
Stained Glass Playhouse director Jay Campbell and actor Tanisha Turner. The play is Fences by August Wilson, and it'll run from February 1st through the 17th with evening performances at 8 and Sunday matinees at 3 in the Stained Glass Playhouse, 4401 Indiana Avenue in Winston-Salem. Stained Glass Playhouse is a community theater that was founded in 1982, just 1 year before August Wilson penned his famous Pulitzer Prize-winning play. Fences also won the 1987 Tony Award for Best Play. You'll find links to more information at wfdd.org/triadarts. And this is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and we'll take a short break right now. When we return, it's time for a theatrical tale about a lonely little tree, an out-of-tune bird, and the enduring friendship they form together. Karoff will be back at the keyboard, and Doug Davis joins us live in Studio A with his band, The Solid Citizens, next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and today in the show, it's theater and music. We've got Steinway artist Mr. Peter Karoff tickling the ivories to the sounds of Beethoven. Just about 10 minutes from now, he'll reveal the rondo during his exploration of musical form. And then from the Romantic Warrior, it's time for your daily dosage of American-infused power pop, brought to you by Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. They've got a new EP out, and you'll hear it live in Studio A. But first, you know, it's good to be a little tree in the forest, the sounds of nature all around you, plenty of fresh air and time to think. That is until the lumberjacks roll around and your little world begins to fall apart at the seams. At times like these, we could all use a friend, and that's exactly what one lovable tree and spunky little bird find when the short little tree and the little bird that could not sing brings this scenario to life. It's a children's theater play by award-winning master playwright Dennis Foon, and this week Greensboro College brings this quirky fable to the Triad. After an extensive off-campus tour to local schools, Greensboro College will present 2 days of performances on Saturday, January 26th at 10 a.m. and 2, and Sunday, the 27th at 2 in the afternoon, in the Movement Lab, building number 11 on the Greensboro College campus. Senior Molly Miller directs, freshman Blake Smith plays the traumatized tree, and senior Caitlin Moss is the little bird who can't carry a tune. So Molly, talk me through a day in the life at Greensboro College and your role there as senior arts administrator.
A day in the life at Greensboro College is a long and very intense one. We are a small private Methodist school, so we have a theater department of about 50 to 60 people. So we do everything. We direct our shows. We've actually had 4 student full lengths this year and a series of one acts coming up, which is a ton of student directors, on top of 3 faculty-directed shows. So we are doing 8 shows this season, which is a lot for us.
In terms of this emphasis on children's theater, I thought that was really interesting. And from where you sit, and you've been at this for a while, why the emphasis at Greensboro College on this sort of outreach?
To me, children's theater is really important. I don't feel like we stimulate kids' imaginations enough and for long enough throughout their adolescent time period. So doing this is just really important, and bringing theater to kids is a way to deal with life's everyday problems. This piece is a wonderful thing about separation anxiety and what it means to have a family, and that families don't necessarily always mean one mom and one dad and 2.5 siblings. They come in all different shapes and sizes and forms.
I want to get to your all's take from the Actors Studio, what the experience has been like, Caitlin, been being in schools, and what are you getting out of this from artistically, and then that student-actor relationship?
It's fun to just do a show where you're going to be entertaining children, and you'll know the second you walk in if they are going to like it, if they're not. And you have to, I feel like it makes you work harder because kids are honest, but also it's just fun. You get to act like a bird and do silly things that people don't do.
The preparation process is what's I found different from any other show besides.
How so?
Because you also have to find those moments to keep the attention from the kids, because you know that they go through a distraction like anything from a distraction. And so energy, I think, is the name of the game with children's theater. You always have to be on your high of being here. The kids are there. I'm talking. Look at me. But still, yeah, just being honest, I think, is very important.
Well, this is a play that can really do that. Beginning with Dennis Foon, no stranger to children's theater, children's books, and lots of success. What is it about his work that grabs you, Molly? We'll swing it your way first from the director's chair there.
His beautiful imagery and his almost lyrical type of speech patterns just were very moving to me. I can imagine being a kid and hearing that read to me as a story or watching it performed and just getting very involved and very invested in the piece.
I got a sense of that in reading through this too. Let's get a taste of it for listeners who aren't familiar with Foon's work. How about a read from early on in the play when you two get together for the first time? Can we hear that?
I am a bird of interesting personality, and I've kind of like gone out on my own, and I accidentally meet this tree, and we need each other, and we become friends.
No! Not the flower, too. I'm sorry. Come back. Please? They're gone. All of them. My eyes barely open and they're gone. I'm alone. Very, very alone. Why didn't they cut me down too? Is it because I'm only good for toothpicks? I'd be happier as a toothpick. At least I'd have company. I would be with hundreds of other little toothpicks in a tiny jar at a restaurant. And when someone would have a nice meal, they would use my point and pick food between their teeth. And then they spit me out and chew me up. It would be better that way. It's what I deserve. Come back, you lumberjacks! Come back and take me too! Anything's better than being alone. Oh, no. Did they hear me? Are they coming back? I can take it. I am not afraid.
On top of spaghetti, covered in peas, I met a poor snowball. Then somebody went.
Stop, please, stop.
Stop what?
You're not a lumberjack.
No, I don't believe so.
Then what was that horrendous noise?
That was not a noise. That was my song. I was singing on top of spaghetti.
But you were singing out of tune and you had the words all wrong.
In what way did I have the words wrong?
It's not I met a poor snowball. It's I lost my poor meatball.
Oh. I smell my poor meatball. Somebody
stop it, please.
If I stop singing, would you mind if I rested under your branches for a while?
Not one bit. Just as long as you don't sing.
I'm not used to getting that kind of criticism.
I'm sorry. I'm just having a really bad day.
That was Greensboro College actors Caitlin Moss as the bird and Blake Smith as the tree in The Short Little Tree and the Little Bird That Could Not Sing. The Greensboro College production, directed by Molly Miller, opens Saturday, January 26th at 10 a.m. and 2 and runs through Sunday the 27th at 2 in the Movement Lab, building number 11 on the Greensboro College campus. You'll find links to more information at wfdd.org/triadarts. I'm David Ford, and you're listening to Triad Arts Weekend. Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens are here today. They'll join me live in Studio A shortly. But first, it's time to do what we can to better understand classical music. It's Karoff at the keyboard.
That's beautiful music by Beethoven. It's composed right at the end of the 18th century. There's a lot of things you could say about a piece this beautiful. You could take a look at the way the melody and the bass line go in opposite directions to create a beautiful counterpoint. And you can talk about the harmonies and so on, but today I'd like to point out something else about this piece, and that is its musical form. You know, form's a little tricky to explain sometimes in non-technical terms, but basically it's just the way the music sort of is laid out over time, how the beginning and the middle and the end of a particular piece relate to each other. And this particular piece has a form that's called rondo. Rondo goes like this, some music, and then some different music, and then the same music you heard at the beginning comes back, and then some different music again, and then the same music at the beginning comes back, and so on. So we can say rondo spelled out like this, A, B, A, C, A, and so on. Now, rondo form is usually used in the end of big sonatas. It's a kind of a playful and sort of fun way to listen to music. And so here we have an adagio from a sonata, a slow movement in the middle of a sonata, that's nevertheless laid out in this way. I think kind of Beethoven just liked the melody so much, he just loved coming back to it over and over again. So there's your melody at the beginning. And then that repeats and comes to a nice little close. And then what do we hear? A whole new melody in a whole new key, not the happy sort of mellow mood of A flat, but this sad and expressive mood of F minor. And here's our new melody. And that melody comes to a bit of a close, and what do we hear? Well, you know it's a rondo, so we know we're going to come back to our opening melody, and here's how he gets to it. So we've had our A, we've had our B, and we've had our A again, and now it's time for the C melody, a melody we haven't heard before, and again, in a new key we haven't explored before, this time A flat minor, the parallel minor of the home key, and it sounds like this. So obviously a little more agitated at the beginning, rather mournful and plaintive. And then developing in a sort of Beethoven 8 way, a rather heroic cadence here. So A, B, A, C, and guess what we get to hear next? Sure enough, a return of the opening A melody, but this time with that busy little triplet accompaniment. Keeps going into the A section. Here's our transition. So your melody from the beginning, that was just as a reminder, sounded like this the first time. This time here at the end, the third appearance, we've got these busy little triplets in the accompaniment. A, B, A, C, A, and rather than going on to a D melody that might get a little unwieldy, Beethoven just finishes it up, but he puts in something called a coda. A little tag, a little ender. Instead of just ending, he puts in just a few measures at the end to close it off, make it a little more final, and just wrap up this beautiful package, this beautiful rondo, this adagio cantabile from the sonata Opus 13 by Ludwig van Beethoven.
Steinway artist, and Wake Forest University professor Mr. Peter Karoff at the keyboard. That's a little segment we like to call Understanding Classical Music. We're going to take another brief intermission right now, and when we return, no, there won't be a test. In fact, it's time to play live in Studio A with Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. What's a tube amp? Who was this guy Martin? And what about Fender? All will be revealed next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and it's time to slide on down the hall once again to the land of great sounds. That'd be live in Studio A action with singer, songwriter, producer, arranger, multi-instrumentalist, and band leader Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens has a new CD out. It's titled A Pageant of Gold, and we're sampling from it right now. A Pageant of Gold was produced, engineered, and mixed by Doug Davis for Flytrap Productions, and you'll find links to CD Baby on our website, wfdd.org/triadarts. In the meantime, Doug dropped by Studio A just ahead of the band's CD release party last week at the garage. He was joined by three Solid Citizens, bassist Ken Moen, Lee Terry on electric guitar, and drummer Dan DeNoyers. So, Doug, let's get a sample of this this great guitar sound you got cooking here.
Sure.
Man, what a gorgeous sound. How old is that instrument? Is that a new one?
It's a relatively new one. This is a Blue Ridge, which is a kind of an up-and-coming company. They're actually manufactured overseas, but they're manufactured mostly to Martin specs, and they're real nice. A lot of bluegrass players are kind of the ones that want to get their Martins off the road. I've been buying these.
And Martin, the big name in guitars, one of the many. Great. We're just going to do a little sound sampling here. Moving over to the bass, and I'm looking at a Fender. I think I am, but it could be... Well, tell me about your bass, Ken.
It's a Franken Fender. It's a 72P bass body and an 88 jazz bass neck. So
combining the jazz neck and a different body.
Narrow nut of the jazz bass, and I always love the P bass body, so this has been a great combination.
It sounds wonderful. It's got a beautiful, warm, rich sound. Let's hear a little bit of it. Really nice. And Dan, you're grooving over here with a minimal set, as they say in the biz, and making it sound wonderful. Does it free you up? Does it limit you to an extent? What when you come to a set with just those two pieces, what does it do to you as a performer?
Well, it limits, obviously, to some degree, but also it expands you from the standpoint that you're always looking for ways to fill and work within the structure of the band. You have to be somewhat creative. That's difficult for me, being creative, but you know.
We'll hear in just a second to the contrary, but here a little bit of a, this is our little 30-second drum solo. I love it. Okay, we're moving over to Lee, and man, what a gorgeous sound. And it fits so nice with this band, too. I got to hear it solo. This is a Fender?
Yeah, it's a Fender semi-hollow-bodied Telecaster. It's probably early 90s. I've had it about 15 years, and it's my main guitar. It just always finds its way into the set. When we recorded the album, I think we would try every guitar in the studio, and we mostly came back to this one. So, and here's why.
All right, let's hear it. That's what it does so well. And man, it just sits so perfect with your all sound. I'm loving it. How often do you crank out a new CD with your own stuff?
Once every 10 years is probably a good pace for me, yeah.
How long was this in process?
This one was probably in process for a couple of years. What we're working on now, we're going to have four EPs coming out. So there'll be four six-song EPs, hopefully over the next year and a quarter. And this is the first one. I always feel like you got to have a lot of material before you really get really strong material.
How so? How does it work out in terms of winning it down?
You know, I guess every songwriter's got their percentage, but I feel like I've got to write 40 or 50 songs before I get a handful of good ones. So I figured rather than belaboring the process for another couple of years, let's kind of put things together as sort of a work in progress. You know, so this is the first six songs we recorded. We've got a bunch of others in the can and in the process.
A Pageant of Gold is the name of the EP.
Yeah.
The EP. And what does EP stand for?
Well, you know, back in the old days, you know, when you had the full-length vinyl, the LP, the long player, I guess EP was technically extended play? Yeah. So typically the EPs were shorter, you know, they were still 33 RPM, 33 and a third, but the, you know, typically four or five songs, you know, shorter sort of promo sort of things.
Okay, I got you. And this, I talked to a lot of singer-songwriters, but you're in addition to singer-songwriter, performer, producer, do you go about crafting songs any differently with your producer hat on, or how do you go back and forth between the two?
Well, I think, you know, everything that I'm involved in, every artist that I work with, everybody I produce, everybody I play with, it all sort of leaks into this eventually, you know, and I guess, especially when I'm working on an album, I think in terms of crafting an album that works as a whole, you know, that tells a whole story, and we will eventually put out a full-length album that will cull material from the EPs.
All right, well, what tune would be a good one to start off with here live in Studio A?
Well, the opening track on the EP is June Parade, and it's also the source of all the lyrics that feed into the titles of all the four EPs.
Started to fall not too long ago. When the lilies start to bloom, are that handsome bride and groom? Have they already gone? Aren't the queen and her mom such a lovely sight? When a spring and fall, tell me you love me after all. When the winter fades, tell me again those plans we made at the June Parade. At the June Parade. Thank you.
That was Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens here live in Studio A for us. I love that tune. And I got to start with Ken because it starts off with a real simple bass line, but you get such a great sense of motion going with that bad boy. How do you arrive at something that's just that smooth and appropriate?
Well, for me, I think I'm usually trying to find a good balance between just pure rhythm, locking in with the drums, and then finding a melodic part that works well with the vocal that's going on. So to me, like a really good bass part kind of is the perfect bridge between the rhythm and the melody. And so that's kind of what I strive for and just keep working until it feels like I've hit the right combination of those.
And Lee Terry, great guitar sound. What do you, let's get into the minutia of great guitar sound, in this case, your Fender Telecaster. What do you love about your sound?
Just the mood of it. You know, I think like tube amps for me are, you know, that's really the way to go. That's where you kind of get that really warm sound. And, you know, with this music particularly, I get to sort of play differently than I would if I was doing my own material. And so I can, you know, really go with what the song's trying to portray in terms of mood and the colors of it. There's a lot of freedom in there.
Tube amp, what does it bring to you? I'm looking at that beat-up old Fender amp over there, and it's getting a gorgeous sound. But talk about tube amps versus your digital.
You can't mistake the sound. You know, if you hear a solid-state amp next to a tube amp, you will hear the difference. It's a, you know, just more warmth and more reality to it. And I think that's what it's all about.
Dan, I got to hoptail over to you here because I'm looking at just a snare drum and a hi-hat. What are those wood brushes called again, Dan?
Rods.
So we got a couple of rods here. It looks like, if you're just looking at it, a bunch of shish kebab skewers all taped together with some duct tape.
That's probably the genesis of this instrument. After three glasses of wine, somebody invented this instrument, probably.
It's great. Well, it's a perfect acoustic for here because it doesn't overwhelm, but we got that nice, meaty snare sound. I'm just curious to know some of your drummer idols, for lack of a better way of putting it, or are there some?
Lee Von Helm is a good one. All the way across to some of the classic rock guys like Bonham. But, you know, going back to Ringo, he kind of showed us all what a drummer really should be, which is essentially lay the backbone down. And once you can capture that, or once you're doing that satisfactorily, then there's other things you can do. But you've got to have the backbone first.
All the plans we made at the June parade. For me, a great song. There are going to be those moments where all I could hear, even if I just heard like that, and the rhythm of the, it would just sound great. Talk about the sounds of words when you're writing. And I know you love storytelling and great literature, but what the sounds of words, what they mean to you, and how you put together a line like that.
You know, a long time ago when I started out songwriting, as an English major, I tried to be as clever and as esoteric and as difficult as I could possibly be. And actually, this band, when we started doing this material, it was a new kind of songwriting for me. I decided that I would try to challenge myself to be more direct and more lyrical and tell narrative stories. And it's been a really difficult process, but I've really enjoyed it. Every once in a while, I get a little bit esoteric.
What's tough about it?
Talk about the anxiety of influence and dealing with cliche and being able to say something directly that hasn't quite been said before. You know, you can't say the same things over and over again, but to try to tell a story in a new way and yet still try to be direct, open, and something that can resonate with a listener, you know, it's hard to avoid cliche. You talk about the A's and parade and moon and June and that sort of thing, and it can be a difficult thing to say something in a way that's simple and resonates and yet hasn't quite been said before.
Well, how's our soundtrack working today, Doug? What's next? This is from the new EP, A Pageant of Gold, and this is Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. Doug, what are you going to hit us with next?
This is called The Great Deluge.
The Great Deluge, live in Studio A. We'll hear Ken Moen on bass, drummer Dan DeNoyers, and guitarist Lee Terry.
Remember green December, back before the green. swept up in our place. Oh, you thought you saw a foreign style. Wait, I wish we had a railway car. It was just a satellite.
Great Deluge, and that's from the new EP, A Pageant of Gold. We heard Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens. You guys have your own thing, your own sound, your own... Talk about your sound, Doug, your vocal sound. So many great singers out there with these unique voices. I'm thinking of Tom Petty or Elvis Costello and all these just amazing cats. What was it like finding your own voice?
Oh, man, that's a big topic for me because I've struggled with my voice over the years. Tried all kinds of different things, and you know, I've got a technically terrible voice, you know, very thin, very a little grating, very high. I used to get a lot of comparisons to Mr. Geddy Lee. So it took me years to find a songwriting style that I felt I could fit into, and I think it's been a process of just a lot of trial and error, but I'm feeling more comfortable now than I ever have been, and it's definitely been a process.
Why We Fought, before we get into this tune, this will be the last one for today and live in Studio A, you do a good job of staying underground is a lyric that caught my ear on this one.
Well, this song takes the form of a sort of a letter from a spurned lover to his former lover you know, somebody that has stayed away for a long time and finally had to make that connection. I guess in the days of the internet, there are a lot of people thinking about making those lost connections when they probably shouldn't, and this is sort of one of those stories.
Acoustic guitarist and vocalist Doug Davis, electric guitarist Lee Terry, drummer Dan DeNoyers, and bassist Ken Moen. Together they are Doug Davis and the Solid Citizens, and you'll find links to their new EP, A Pageant of Gold, on our website, wfdd.org/triadarts. You can hear Doug February 22nd at 6 o'clock, where he'll be performing a Shepherd's House benefit at the Cross Creek Country Club in Mount Airy. Well, that's all for today's edition of Triad Arts Weekend. Eddie Garcia engineers and produces this program, and our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. You'll find podcasts and archived episodes on our website, wfdd.org/triadarts, and you can send your questions, comments, and suggestions to triadarts@wfu.edu. I'm David Ford. Happy Friday, and thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.
I missed the chorus.